Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is the 29th of January, which means the nightmare of the first month is nearly over, but the election continues. These are the stories we want to talk about today. Firstly, Catherine Noone has had a bit of a troublesome day. She was recorded talking to a reporter saying that Leo was autistic, and then in trying to fix that problem, she pretty much just shot herself in the head repeatedly. It was impressive, actually.
You know the old thing, for God's sake, stop digging. Well, it's the voices could be heard. Keep digging, Catherine. Australia can't be far.
I prefer to think that her thought process was, well, I'll just dig up.
I can see the light.
A patient advocate has resigned from the board of the HSE for reasons that are by turns deeply ironic and I would say highly amusing, although Michael doesn't agree with me on that.
Well, I think amusing is an odd choice. Anyway, interesting, certainly.
The teachers, they're at it again.
Or not at it, which is maybe more of the problem.
And then finally, we have the story of two TDs, unrelated by anything, Noel Graylish and Padraig Tobin. Both of them have had quite good news recently, in that articles are being published saying that they may be in trouble, which is exactly what you want.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't want an article going, lads, they're going to romp home, don't bother to vote. So, to start with, we may as well start, I suppose, quickly on the National Maternity Service. There's nothing. You may have heard that one of the patient advocates on the board of the HSE resigned after only 6 months in the job.
Yeah, I came across it through a friend of GRIP, to Vicky Whelan, a great woman and friend of mine, who mentioned that this man had resigned, and she said she was very sad about it because he was a really decent man, a passionate, engaged, hardworking man, and was a great advocate for the patient, and that his departure would impoverish the process quite a bit.
What I found particularly interesting was the reason that he resigned. So yeah. He resigned because of a failure by the Taoiseach and Simon Harris to fund the National Maternity Strategy. Now, the National Maternity Strategy, when it was created, was meant to be the 10-year maternity strategy for Ireland. The funding was ring-fenced, armour-clad, nothing was going to destroy this thing. And the reason it was done in that way is because the National Maternity Strategy was put together after the death of Savita Halappavanara. And the government said, and this is a quote, she is at the core of the development of these standards.
Yes.
Now, it turned out in the end that without that report being fully implemented, they removed a great deal of the funding for it. And what I found particularly funny is where they put the funding. So you have this strategy, it's meant to bring down maternal deaths. It's, I think it's 77 recommendations, and many of which have not been implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they took the funding that was meant to go to this report on proven causes of maternal death, and they used it to implement the abortion services.
Well, for once, we can talk about irony and mean it. There's a grotesque irony, I think, in this, because what I think it demonstrates with it, the poor woman, Savita Halappavanara, was at the core of something, certainly. But whether or not she was at the core of a deep concern to increase the quality of maternal health in Ireland is now open to doubt. It's kind of predictable in a horrible way.
I wonder if they're going to send a note to her husband, because they did send her husband a copy of the new guidelines when they brought them in.
Wasn't that good of them?
It was good of them. I wonder if they told them that they failed to implement them and then diverted the money to something they liked more.
Oh, well, Gary, now, in the words of Bertie Ahern, that was then and this is now, and I think we should just all move on.
And I mean, it's closely linked enough that you can say, well, you know, this is what she would have wanted. And that's the great thing about saying it about the dead. They can't, they can't say, perhaps not. But it was just a wonderful example, because no one really complained, no one really noted.
Well, in fact, nobody. We live in an age where the press, generally speaking, absolutely lionizes the passionate, engaged citizen activist, the community advocate. These are the people that we look to as the heroes of our social entrepreneurial societies. Yet this man, who seems to have been an admirable man in many ways, and has decided to do this in the middle of an election where health has been a very hot-button issue, even though it was curiously completely ignored in the Clareburn leaders debate. That was, I thought, an odd choice. But health is, I think, Gary, something of a talking point in this election. He resigns in the midst of it, and again, the dogs don't bark. There ain't no really anybody talking about it.
No, and it is noted in the Irish Times article on this that Simon Harris tried, one would assume quite desperately, to persuade him not to resign, or at least, please God, don't do it now.
Yeah.
Like, give us 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But there is a great humour in defunding the National Maternity Strategy, which would cover numerous causes of maternal death and maternal injury and risks to women in order to fund the abortion service, which will do very little to improve any step parts of maternal safety.
Well, you say that, Gary, yet I'm fairly sure that that it's Simon or Simon's friends were at pains to inform the country that actually one of the central things that we had to do to guarantee a level of safety for maternal health was the introduction of, even though the statistics regarding maternal safety in Ireland, as opposed to other countries with abortion regimes, and we don't want to relitigate the whole thing again, but the numbers did not seem to suggest that that was the case. But maybe he simply said, well, look, I've introduced the repeal of the 80s by itself, a massive advance for the safety and the health of women in maternity hospitals. Therefore, this is the direction that the money should flow. I think it's spacious, but maybe if there was rationalization going on, maybe that's the direction it went.
Yes. But anyway, we as a country made the decision that rather than implementing a policy which would bring in clean and well-regulated and safe maternity wards, we would put that money into abortion, not because that would actually produce better outcomes, but because it was way more politically popular, and the government promised to bring in abortion by the 1st of January in a move which I believe was described by doctors at the time as so hasty it may endanger the lives of patients. But that's neither here nor there. We did it. It's quite funny. It's not going to change. So you may as well find the humour in it.
Okay.
Anyway, Catherine Noon.
Speaking of humour, good old Catherine. I mean, I'm all sorts of conflicted, Gary, about the Catherine thing. As you know, I'm sure Catherine's completely unaware of both this fact and of me. But for the last number of years, between podcasts and blog posts and things, I've followed carefully the course of the career of Catherine Noon, who is one of those Fine Gaelers who cannot see something without saying, either ban it or regulate it, whether it's jam or cakes or sugar or ice cream vans or chippers near schools.
Wasn't it Catherine Noon who called for MMA to be banned and then when interviewed about it had to admit that she actually didn't know what MMA was and had thought it was pro wrestling?
Yeah, I think that there was a big MMA fight coming to Dublin or something at the time, and it was creating quite a bit of a hoo-ha-ha and brouhaha, and Catherine said she wanted it banned. Catherine, I wrote a piece many moons ago called Catherine Noon and the Toffee Wars, when Catherine was proposing something like a maximum sugar content of 20% in foods, which, as I observed at the time, would mean that jam and marmalade, meringue and chutney and all, any kind of cake or sweet pastries, they would all disappear, and that perhaps Catherine hadn't spent much. But my favourite was when, now this is not something which doesn't, without support amongst parents, I will admit, but my favourite was she wanted to ban ice cream vans and using chimes or music in the summer. You know, the vans you hear them and you think, ice cream. Well, she wanted those banned. I thought, God, you know, in life, you know, Gary, at times there is little joy. Is it really necessary to go around with a hammer, baiting it down at every opportunity you can find it?
To be fair to Catherine Noon, she did then later call for MMA to be recognised by Sporting Ireland.
Well done.
I mean, there is a tendency amongst politicians to sort of go, well, I said it once and now I'm stuck with it for the rest of forever.
You're absolutely right, Gary. We should be gracious and recognise that that is indeed for a politician. Not insignificant move. However, Catherine has come out and the weird thing, I don't think she's trying to be, I mean, maybe we're being naive, or I'm being naive, or good-willed here, but I don't think she was actually trying to be nasty or undermining about Leo.
No, I mean, for those who haven't seen it, she told a reporter who was recording the situation that Leo, I believe the phrase was, he's autistic, there's no doubt about it, he's definitely on the spectrum.
Yeah.
I think because Catherine, probably due to her part in the abortion referendum, has gotten used to the idea that the press are her friends and will not report things that are damaging on her.
Yeah, yeah. She's one of those people who pets stray dogs because she's only ever met a nice dog. And then one day she gets bit.
So she called him autistic. She then made a number of positive comments about him, basically saying, like, the basic gist was, look, he's not warm, he's not friendly, he doesn't really get social interaction, but he's a really good politician for the following reasons. Then the Times call her back later, and they go, yeah, we're going to write a story on how you referred to your party leader as autistic. And she tells them she didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And then they go, well, we recorded it. At which point she goes, well, I didn't mean it in that way. I wasn't talking about the illness, which right there pisses off the autism people.
Yes.
And then she somehow, and I don't, the article is not actually terribly well written, so it's quite difficult to tell what happened and what led to this, but she's apparently giving examples of words that can be used in different contexts and are offensive in some contexts and inoffensive in others, and the two options she goes with are special, as in mentally disabled.
Yes.
And nigger. Yeah, and then immediately has to go, not that I would ever say the N-word, even though I just have.
Yeah.
That was a bad example. And then gives an example of how she sometimes calls herself special, but isn't literally saying. I'd like to think that as soon as she got to that point, there was a little part of her mind that just kind of went, you have fucked up.
Oh, I think there was a little part of her mind which started saying that the minute the phone calls came in.
It does kind of read as someone who's never dealt with a journalist before.
Well, yeah, although, you know, sometimes...
I wouldn't talk like that to a journalist. I don't deal with that many, although arguably I am one, but I tend not to slur myself like that.
I know what you mean, but you don't know. I mean, sometimes she's in the middle of an election campaign.
It was from the Times as well, who were very, very much on her side during the abortion referendum.
Yeah.
So she may have thought, even though Ellen Coyne is gone, maybe that's still there.
You know, she may be really, really tired. And I'm not saying that, like, sarcastic. In the middle of a campaign, being sleep deprived is worse than being drunk at times, you know, for your ability to, you know, make good choices about things. She misspoke. She thought she was genuinely trying to speak to the issue that the perception that Leo is aloof and detached and doesn't care and he's cold, which is a problem for them politically. And she's saying he's not really, it's just that's not his gift because he is a slightly different person, but he has other gifts. He's aware of these problems, he just doesn't emote about them, but he does know, he does care, and he's a really good guy. Now, when she starts to dig with the N-word, which I feel so uncomfortable. I mean, I dislike the word, and I when I hear it, people use it, I think there is a hard ugliness to it. But at the same time, the N-word, it's like it's, you know, that scene in Monty Python, The Life of Brian, where the guy's going to be stoned, and all I said was that piece of halibut was good enough for Jehovah.
No, I it reminds me of, there was an old Stephen and Fry sketch about a man in a vet, and he just starts talking to him and annoying him, and he's asking him about, this man sits beside another and is annoying him, asking him what's happening with the pet. He goes, well, he's got to be put down, he's got cancer. And Stephen Fry's character immediately goes, oh, he's got the cancy-wancy, does he? Is he going to die-zy-wise-y? And every time I hear the phrase, the N-word, that's all I can think of.
Anyway, well, a bit, you know, not that it's comparable at all, I suppose, except that it is. the election campaign is ongoing. So the one thing we can be confident of is that she will not be dropped or deselected.
She won't win either, because Catherine Noon will never win.
Well, no. I'm just wondering, Gary, and after the her failure to take a seat, will Simon Harris come out and say that he's delighted that she didn't win a seat? And will Leo say that was a good thing that she didn't win?
Well, Simon has already come out and said that her comments about autism are absolutely unacceptable. And Leo has come out and said, well, she apologised, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, but that's during the election.
That is during the election. There may be the old Verona Murphy.
I
fully support her. And then when she loses, you go, well, it's good that she lost. She wouldn't have been in the party for long. And you have to go, then why did you run her?
Is it Verona Mark II here, I wonder? I don't think it'll do Leo any harm, because...
No, I think Leo actually... Well, Leo's reaction to the comment, I think, will stand to him. His personal reaction of just, look, she apologised, I'm not going to take it personally.
Yeah.
The problem is that it's really annoyed the autism groups. And an important thing to know about the autism groups is they're a combination of people with autism and generally the parents of people with autism.
Right.
And they aren't terribly humorful about autism.
Well, I don't suppose they...
Although, I find the fact that I've had, over the years, I've talked to many people in Fine Gael who think that Leo does have autism. Or generally, at the time, they would have said Asperger's or something like that.
On the spectrum was the phrase that was used to me.
Yes, is commonly used in relation to Leo. It's also a common phrase in public life.
Yeah.
That's how people talk about it. Whether or not that's medically accurate is an entirely different thing. But I must say, I do find this incredible backlash that people are now saying she was incredibly insulting to people with autism and it's a slur. It strikes me as a very odd reaction if you legitimately believe that autism is not a major issue. My reaction to it was, well, he either is or he isn't, but I definitely get what she's trying to say. It's not terribly offensive either way.
And if he is, and if she's right, what she's saying is it's okay for somebody who has autism to be Taoiseach.
I mean, yeah, it's a sort of one of a, well, if he has autism, that's a sign that you can get to the highest office in the land with autism. And if he doesn't have autism, it's a sign you can get to the highest office in the land with other people pretty sure you have autism.
It's sort of breaking lots of glass ceilings, I suppose.
There has been a legitimate outpouring of anger, it seems, about it. And I don't get it. I can understand particularly the parents of autistic children, because parents get very protective of their children.
Naturally.
But it didn't seem like she was trying to insult him. She seemed to mean it in a matter-of-fact way. A lot of them took offence with the fact she said illness, because there has been a massive movement towards moving away from a medicalised model, which would class things like autism as illnesses or disabilities. Having said that, severe autism is absolutely a massive problem in people's lives. But it makes me feel that Noon is unfairly put upon, which is a feeling I never thought I would have to have.
No, I know, Jimmy. We saw a lot of that discourse about the language played out during various spats about Greta Thunberg. And I think it's understandable that the notion that it is in the language of once upon a time, I don't know if people say this, when rather than say people were disabled, they were differently abled. And I think that's the point that a lot of autism activists would make, is that this is particularly true about people with autism. It's not that they are disabled or that they're ill, but they are differently abled. They see the world or they engage the world in a different way. But I don't think there was any malice in it. It was a lay person misspeaking, if we like. And we go back to your Reginald Hunter quote, wasn't it? You know, when he was asked what race he was, when you said it, was there hatred in your heart? I think plainly there wasn't. So I'd give Catherine a passing mark on this. Let's move on. She's not going to get elected up in, where is it, Dublin Bay North?
To be honest, Michael, I don't have the memory to remember where everyone is running. So I only tend to remember people who are likely to actually do something.
I think
Catherine Noon will not get in.
My memory, she's Dublin Bay North, and Richard Bruton will take the seat there. That's where Tommy Bruin is gone, and Fintan, what was his name? Fintan? Was it Fintan? one of the independents, he's gone. So Adon will take the seat there as well, which is something which doesn't give me great joy. Anyway, the teachers.
Tell me about the poor teachers, Michael, because when you said to me that you wanted to talk about the teachers, I think my reaction was basically, sure, what are they complaining about now?
Well, what they're complaining, although they are. They always have issues that they would like to raise, certainly true. But there's an interesting article in the Indo today, which just amplified it, what I had been seeing for some time now, and isn't being talked about at all. And I think that we have to start taking this a little bit more seriously. And that's that there is a serious shortage of teachers. 4 in 5 second level schools have reported receiving no application for a recently advertised post. In the last 6 months, 77% of principals have reported advertising for jobs for which no one, not one person, has applied. So think of that. You're talking about schools all over the country, not just in Dublin. It's one area in particular, but all over the country, although Dublin is particularly problematic, where you're advertising jobs which would be perceived to be well paid and decent, and 77% of them don't get a single application. 97% of principals have said they have difficulties in recruiting teachers in the last 6 months. Particular subjects, languages. It's very hard to find people with languages, so subjects like French, Spanish, German are a problem. Irish is a big issue. Home ec, which I don't know particularly why, but home economics, they're finding it hard to find people. Biology, physics, chemistry, also PE. And what does that mean? Well, it means that gradually we're going to be seeing a situation where more and more children will be taught by people who are not graduates or specialists in that area. Now, that will, schools will organize themselves as best as they can in response to that. They're not static objects, so it'll mostly be, this will start off at the junior cycle level. But that's already less than ideal. But if it keeps on going, then we're just going to start seeing situations where even at senior cycle, we're going to have people teaching subjects that are not qualified really to teach them. Now, we have a good educational system here. We've always had pretty decent education. But if we look at the PISA rankings that came out, we are well ahead of the average on the OECD. In Europe, we come third behind Estonia and Finland. Now, Finland is historically the leader, although Estonia has taken over. You could argue that Estonia is just Finland across the water. And we do well. We score above average on all three areas, reading, mathematics and science. Highest on reading. We're only 518, which is 2 points behind Finland. But in the studies that PISA have done that have been done, particularly since this became when the Finns broke onto the scene in the late 90s and people started to wonder what was special about the system. One thing that seems to be the case that is across all systems of educational system that work is high quality graduates. So rather than people who take generalized degrees, but people who, history being taught by history graduates, maths being taught by maths graduates. But not just that. But say, for example, in Finland, it was the case that teachers were drawn from the top 10% of graduates. Also, increasingly, that you're not looking at people who simply have undergraduate, that bachelor's degrees, but it is now the case that pretty well anybody coming into the profession will have a master's. The HDIP is being replaced, so most people, so people now come in with the MPE, which is the Masters in Professional Education. if you're looking at primary education, it's becoming the case that if you want to be serious about becoming a principal, it's not enough anymore to have the Masters, but people are increasingly doing doctorates in education. Now, but the value of that, I don't know, education departments around the world, but anyway, that's another subject. But it is a selective issue. It does tend to select the higher achieving academics. We need to, this is a problem. And we need to have a reasonable grown-up. So, I don't think teachers historically do themselves any favours in their communications, Gary. I think their unions are piss-poor at explaining what the precise concerns of teachers are. I think a lot of times people think that they look at them and say, well, they're well-paid. They go in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They finish at 4. They have massive holidays. What the hell are they talking about? They should try a real job. They can never get sacked. And also, all of us have been to school. All of us have had a teacher or teachers that we didn't like. And I think that that's something that we bring to this kind of discussion, that we project our own particular experiences onto it. But it may be that, you know, we're operating in a market for people. We're operating in a market for graduates and people with postgraduate qualifications. We may have to look at, if we're not in a position, over immediately anyway, to significantly change the financial circumstances of the job, then there are things that they can. The persistence, for example, with the Croke Park hours is ridiculous. I mean, you know, one of the things you may or may not be aware of, the Croke Park, you can't do any kind of upskilling course or further education kind of work in your Croke Park hours. Croke Park hours, you go to any teacher, they say it's just a waste of time. It's just basically a rule, which means that instead of going home at 4, they have to sit there from 4 to 6 in the staff room doing busy work. And there's a lot of excessive busy work. This economy is not going to turn into an economy tomorrow where we produce loads and loads of high class engineering apprentices and we can suddenly develop some kind of large industrial base. If we're going to have people who are getting jobs, they're going to be getting jobs in the tertiary sector, and they're going to need to be decently educated. We need to, one lesson we know from our near neighbours is, when a school system, an education system starts to fray, starts to degrade, it is far easier to stop it than it is to rebuild it. I think that's true of most systems. Much better stop it going down the tubes than having to resurrect it, because all sorts of things will happen as a consequence of that. So anyway, I think that we need to look at that. We need to look at pay issues. We have to need equality, what they call equality of pay issues, because, as you know, after the crash, the new graduates were put on different scales. Internal career pathways have to be looked at. And also just contracts. It's incredible. If you go to large schools today, the number of teachers, young teachers who are there and they're being employed on a basis of September to June, and this is going on and on. Unless you are absolutely dedicated to the idea that you're going to be a teacher, after a while, if there are other opportunities in the economy, and there are other opportunities for graduates in the economy, I think you're going to find more and more people just walking away and saying, fact that for a game of soldiers. And as much as people may not like it, if we want to have decent education, we're going to have to find a way of paying for it. Anyway, that's just my, I think it's something that we need to flag, to be aware of. And I'm curious also that it hasn't at all been an issue in the election. Nobody's talking about education. There you go. Silence came the response.
Thank you, Michael. I felt the same energy I felt there that I feel when my girlfriend talks about hats.
I like hats.
So does she. Very, very much.
I'm in favour of hats.
And I nod, and I smile, and I go, oh, that one has ruffles.
It may happen, Gary, one time that you will have a small, miniature version of a Gary that you want to put into a school, and then I can tell you it may become an issue of importance to you.
No, I'll use the Victorian system, so I imagine if the school is bad, it'll take me about 16 years to realise it.
Oh, very humane of you. Anyway.
I am not good with children. I was asked, would I sign a card for my sister's young child, who's about 2, mm-hmm. It was a family gathering, and I was asked, would I sign this card for her? And I immediately responded by going, "But the child is illiterate." Which was, I was told upon review, not the appropriate answer. But I didn't have to sign that card, Michael. And that's me with children.
I have to ask, Gary, how much effort would have gone into signing the card?
She can't read the card, Michael. There's no point writing it. The child is illiterate. Now, there I may, assume she'll acquire literacy at some
there
point.
There may come a day that she is literate and she will go back and look and say, "Oh, look, there's my second birthday card. Ah, no, there's a birthday wish from my Uncle Gary, the man that went off to the North Pole and got eaten by a bear."
That's fair. That's a fair assumption. Well, I'm sure someone will then tell her the story, and in a way it'll be a learning experience in the value of the immaterial.
And she'll nod sage and he says, "Ah, so that's what they mean where they say those things about Uncle Gary."
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Anyway, back on the campaign trail, there are two, at least, or there are many, many TDs, I'm sure, in desperate fights for their seats, but two have been reported around the gap. One especially, over in Galway, I believe.
Noel Grealish in Galway. I never thought a national, well, series of national news entities would have this sort of interest in a rural TD, independent TD.
Indeed.
In how he's doing. But the amount of articles I've written saying he's going to be in trouble.
You've written or read?
Read, sorry. I've been writing a lot of articles recently. Some of them are decent.
But not about Noel Grealish?
Not about Noel Grealish, no.
And what, Gary, are they saying about Noel Grealish?
Well, that Noel is in trouble.
Is he
that,
in trouble?
That polling has indicated that he is in some deep trouble and may lose his seat, Michael.
Well, I am minded of conversations that we used to have over a cup of tea when I was briefly involved with John Paul Phelan on, it was European campaign, or I think it was a Dáil campaign, European at the time, I think. And I used to say, "You know, now every night you must say the same prayer to the Lord God. Please, God, let the Irish Times criticise me tomorrow morning." Because that would have been just manna from heaven for the kind of ultra that we were after. And I think that perhaps when Noel Grealish saw these reports, cups of tea all around in the Grealish household.
Oh, fantastic. In the same way, Padder Tobin, in these stories about how he is in danger, also fantastic. Now, you don't want something saying you're definitely going to lose.
No. That can become a self-fulfilling
prophecy. People don't like losers.
Yeah, they feel like there's a sense of, unless they're absolutely core committed, there's a sense they're kind of wasting the vote. Why bother? But Gary, it is one of the great comedies of Irish political life. All of my life that I've been aware of elections, and sadly that happened at far too early an age for in my childhood than was appropriate.
I know you were one of those soulless husks that joined the youth wing of a political party.
I was, but I've been involved. I liked politics before. I loved getting the stickers. I thought the stickers were great fun. Actually, politics was much more colourful in the 70s. You had buses and stickers and stuff you put on your bike, and you had songs and all sorts of things. But every single year, every single election, you'd meet somebody who would say, "Oh, did you hear about Matty? What? Oh, he's in trouble. Oh, he's in trouble." And you know, at the beginning, when you're 8 years old or 10 years old, you think, "Oh my goodness, he's in trouble." Now, when somebody would come up to me and drag me over to the corner of a bar and say, "Have you heard? Oh, apparently he's in terrible trouble. Your man from below the parish is 8 in his vote. Oh, he's in terrible trouble." And everybody takes it seriously. And there are certain politicians. There's one TD I can think of, not in my constituency, but a nearby one. And he's been elected and re-elected without fail for a long time now. And every single election that I know of, at some time during, the word has gone out, "Oh, he's in awful trouble. He's in awful trouble." And they come out from the woods and they come down from the mountains. They rise up from the graves and out they come and they vote. Now, I'm sure it is actually true that, for example, Padder is going to be under severe pressure. I cannot believe that Sinn Féin are not going to put their very best efforts into taking that seat back.
No, the joke I heard, which I believe came from Padder, was that by the end of this, Mary Lou is going to have a Navan accent.
Grealish, of course, I suppose, is a particular target because of his controversial comments.
I mean, they've been referred to by newspapers as controversial comments and controversial questions. The fact I can't remember exactly what he said the first time would indicate possibly either not controversial or not important. And many things that are controversial are not important.
I can remember the Gettysburg Address with more accuracy. That was longer ago and in a foreign country. I have a note, something in my head said it was something to do with Uchterard.
Or Roosie, or one of those things. And then he, in the Dáil, asked a question about remittances to Nigeria, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes,
yes. Yes, and that was the point where people went, well, the figures he's using are inaccurate.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes,
and then
yes.
Decided that the other figures they had, which yes. were also, as deemed by the organization that put them together, totally based on estimates, yeah. were perfectly accurate, and how dare the man not have used these ones?
Rather than the World Bank figures.
Yes, and there's only one reason he would have done that, because he's a racist.
Really?
And I did have the sort of, you're right, his figures aren't trustworthy, but neither are yours, so why is this now the gold standard here?
If it happens that on the back of this he can go around and say, oh, look what they're saying about me up in Dublin. And the man is re-elected, and not just for that, I'm sure, but for all the good work that he does. I mean, take Michael Lowry, please.
Take him where?
Anywhere you like. It never ceases to surprise, apparently, if you believe what is written, that Michael Lowry keeps getting re-elected. And yet, if these people who are so shocked and horrified by Michael Lowry's re-election are genuinely so, and they were actually committed to it, the notion of not getting him re-elected, would they just stop making comments about Michael Lowry in what are perceived to be, shall we say, the Dublin newspapers?
Here's a question for you about Michael Lowry as a piece of political trivia, Michael.
Yeah, go on.
What would you say was the last year Michael Lowry got under 10,000 votes?
Oh, God.
The last, let's say, national election, because there was that weird situation in 1999.
I'm going to have a guess, a stab in the dark, and say 1997.
1997, if it's only national elections, was in fact the last year he got less than 10,000 votes in a year. In 1992, which was his last election with Fine Gael, he got 7,401.
Right.
1997, he's on 11,000.
Right.
Last year, he got 13,000.
Right.
His vote, I mean, in 2002, it went down to 10,000. Right. 2007, you're on 12,000. 2011, yeah. You're on 14,000. Michael Lowry has had nothing but net politically for pretty much 30 years. I mean, the man has been elected since the 25th Dáil.
He's getting a decent career out of it. I picked 97 because 97 was he was in government, and that was the year that the...
Like, this man who hasn't lost an election in 33 years.
Which is good going in Irish politics. One of the things that just I find tedious, the way that people just trot out cliches because it's in there and without even momentary reflection. You see this on Twitter. You see the bien pensant, the well informed always say, well, of course, the fact is that the Irish people just keep on voting for the old standard parties. That's just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. When the fact is, the Irish people have been patently obvious in the way that has changed massively. Fianna Fáil have gone from being a party which could get 47 and 48% of the vote down to a party which was getting 18% of the vote. We're now looking at a situation where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together could get less than 50% of the vote. We have communists in the Dáil for the first time, for God's sake. The leader only, of the country is
not only that
gay half Indian.
But we recently had a seven-way debate of the party leaders, at which the communist was pretty much, from what I've seen from the public, voted as the best speaker.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a country which had three parties.
Actually, looking at Michael Lowry's, there is actually something I just noticed, which is actually incredibly impressive. Not only has he won, got over 10,000 votes at every election he's run since 1997, every election since 1997, he's won the first seat on the first count.
Yeah. The fact is, if you look at the turnover in seats in constituencies, now very often it'll be turnover of personnel, but there'll be situations in my own constituency here where Fine Gael have elected three TDs and on other occasions elected one. Fianna Fáil have gone from three TDs and elected one. On others, you have in the last five elections, you've had independents elected four times. Well, Toomey had sort of was a post-independent, Mick Wallace twice as an independent. This would have been perceived to be a very stable, old, stodgy, sort of rural Leinster constituency. Independents all over the gaff when you go over the Shannon. The stability of Irish politics is vastly overrated these days. But the one thing I think we can say confidently, nobody's going around saying that Michael Lowry is in danger of losing the seat. Although I'm sure that Michael is desperately trying to get somebody to say it.
I don't know. The normal laws of Irish politics don't really apply to Michael Lowry. I'm actually curious how many other people in the state have that record of not just winning, but every time being above quota and every time getting in on the first count.
Well, above quota, I mean, he hasn't always been above quota.
Since 1997, he has.
He was elected on the first count in 97, was he?
In 97, he had 1.17 of the quota.
1.17?
He's gotten, in the last election, his vote share dropped about 13%.
Right.
And he still got 1.01 of the quota.
So, 97, 2002, 2007, 2011, 2006. So he's had five elections being elected in the first count.
Five elections, first count, over 10,000 votes every time.
God. Wow, that's impressive. Micheál Martin, maybe. I don't know. I say Micheál Martin has been elected on the first. Well, I don't know, maybe 2011. Possibly not.
I mean, if he could do it in 2011, that's fairly impressive.
He probably didn't because I do remember that he brought in a second TD, Micheál McGrath got elected. It was, I think, the only constituency in the country that year that returned two Fianna Fáil TDs whatever he is, Cork South Central, whatever he is. But Micheál, I can't think of anybody else that might have done.
Micheál is very close to Lowry, actually. He's gotten in on the first count and gotten over 10,000 votes since 2002. And in 1997, he got in on the first count, but only got 9,652 votes.
But still on the first count.
But in 1992, it took him, he was elected on the 11th count.
Yeah, 92, and he must have been a fairly young TD. Yeah.
2011, where people were just dropping all over the place, he gets over 10,000. He gets exactly the quota.
Right. That was good going. Good going, and particularly when you consider that another TD gets elected out of it. Anyway, the Grealish story will be resolved in a week and a half. We'll be able to find out if it helped or hindered.
I mean, I have nothing against Noel Grealish, but I would, if he doesn't get elected, we will not have 3 weeks of think pieces about how his election proves the supremacy of racism in Ireland. And I don't need three more weeks of Fintan O'Toole and Una Mullally doing this.
Before we leave, and we tied up, I probably misread this, but I was mooching around Twitter a while. Did somebody accuse you of being on the alt-right?
Oh, probably.
That's a worry. I don't know if I want to be associated. Not because, of course, nobody, thankfully, since nobody's ever heard of me or knows me from a hole in the wall, I don't get accused of these things. But I don't know if I ought to associate
somebody. I have my private messages open on Twitter, so occasionally I get some quite good stuff. my general response is that I've been called worse things by far better people. And people seem to take that as an insult of some kind.
Really? People are funny, Gary.
It just seems to set them off.
They are odd.
I don't actually know what the term alt-right means anymore. I think it's become like the term neoliberal.
I never knew what it meant, and I don't say that. I didn't, honest to God, it seemed to be one of those bags that was so big.
It seemed to be a sort of, well, the non-respectable right. And the problem with that is what the respectable right is seems to differ based on who you talk to. There is no respectable right if you're, let's say, talking to a member of People Before Profit. So, who cares?
Well, when people from the Socialist Party back in the 80s were being described by Fintan O'Toole as social democrats, it's very hard to know exactly on that basis of that axis where the right lies.
Did you see Vincent Brown helping launch Regina Doherty's campaign, actually?
I did not.
Oh, he did.
Vinny, is there a family connection?
I don't know. I assumed he was just there because he's still interested and he just goes around to these things. And then I saw a series of photos that made it look like he was talking at it. And with Regina and smiling and shaking the hand and maybe he's going back to his roots in Fine Gael.
Predictable is not a word that anybody ever used about Vincent Brown. So we can leave it at. Well, Gary, I suppose we'll draw a veil as we do over these things, and we will return at the weekend to. I think we may have had another opinion poll by then. I do love my opinion poll, as you know. And we'll see. Have Fine Gael, as some pundits are saying, have they turned the corner? Is the race tightening? Is the Sinn Féin vote solidifying up? All these questions.
I do quite like the fact I leave the country the week after the election. I have to see this through to the end, and then I can go for a while.
Then you go dancing.
Yes, yes, Vienna.
Very good.
What is that seemed a perfectly acceptable holiday to me.
Perfectly reasonable.
It was very cheap as well. I recommend it.
Well, until the weekend, I'd say goodbye, and good luck, and enjoy your week.
All the best.